All right, everybody, welcome to the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am one of your hosts, Nima Vedati, out here in the Texas Hill Country where it is beautiful and the wildflowers are popping up all around. We've got Michael Dean with the aerial view up in Airworm One. How you doing today, Mr. Dean?
I'm not actually in Airworm One today. I am on the Flyoming Airlines company blimp.
Oh, okay. Will that get by the no-fly zone in Nevada? Is that why you switched?
Yeah, I think they don't want people. I think they had to make a artificial dome over that rancher because they want to keep. Because a lot of ranchers have planes. That's probably what it is. They're like, yeah, we don't want them. We want to have our own drones up there. So anyway, we are not alone today. We are not alone on the Freedom Fiends. We have a guest, long time coming. Kenneth Royce, a.k.a. Boston Tea Party. Are you there, Boston?
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Hey, you sound kind of like my late night show.
That's right. Good to be with you on a beautiful Saturday morning, Royce.
So I'm going to call you Boston, or Nima wants to know, what's the frequency, Kenneth? I guess that's an old reference to something. Go ahead, Nima. Anyway.
What do you want us to call you today?
Yeah, there you
Mr.
go.
Mr. Party. Mr. Pilot, like Mr. Party.
I respond to either one.
Okay.
Mr. Party,
okay.
Kind of pompous.
All right.
Kenneth or Boston, either one's fine.
You sound really good. I had some whole funny thing I'd written about how, like, I had to be secreted away by shady intermediaries and blindfolded and taken to an undisclosed location, and then we're communicating with some Enigma machines we bought off eBay, connected to ham radios, but nah, man, it's just you are a hard guy to get a hold of, and you're a hard guy to interview. Not hard guy to interview, but you don't do a lot of interviews, and you actually installed Skype. That's how much you wanted to do this.
I had to blindfold myself to do this, so I don't even know where I'm at. So, but you're right. I just installed Skype.
Yeah.
But you know, the show is worth it, and I've been wanting to do this for quite a while.
Thanks, man. So, Boston, you're a big influence on me. You are part of the reason I'm in Wyoming, because I basically read your book, You and the Police, in one sitting, and went from, you know, lazy Democrat statist to minarchist in one sitting, and then got on the Free State Wyoming Forum and discovered there was something called open carry, and I was like, that's worth leaving California for. And I woke my wife up
Absolutely.
And said, we're moving to Wyoming, honey. So, and you've been an influence to a lot of people. You wrote the book Boston's Gun Bible. You wrote they're mostly nonfiction book, but you wrote a novel called Moulin Labe about Wyoming becoming libertarian paradise. Mm-hmm. And you've got a new book out. I have a copy of it in front of me. It's called Modules for Manhood, and this is a really good book. It's a little different than your other books. Why don't you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, the other books were more single subject oriented and stuff that was of interest to me and I thought important for Americans. But after being in this so-called industry for 21 years now, I'm morphing into something I think more core and primal of what it takes to be a freedom-oriented individual, and that's getting your own self sorted out. This is something I've been going through personally. And I'm certainly not there yet. It's a journey, not a destination. But, you know, if we're not right with ourselves, so to speak, if we've got holes in us, modules that need to be filled, especially as men, you know, how free do we think we can be individually, much less collectively? So this is a direction I'm going, and I think it relates to my other books, but at a higher and meta level.
I kind of feel like if your books were a college course, this would be the first one, not the last in this series. Not that this is your
last
book. This is a three-part series, and this is part one, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, ironically, it should have been the first one, but, you know, I wasn't old enough and mature enough and experienced enough to have written it, you know, back in 1992. So, you know, I had to grow up in order for this kind of book to come out of me.
Well, what are your criticisms of modern man? On the back of the book, it says, yesterday a 23-year-old was a real man. It's got a picture of a guy in a jet fighter. And then it says, meet our modern man. And it's got a guy, a hipster with horn-rimmed glasses in adult pajamas with a mocha latte in his hand.
Right.
What happened? Why is that our modern man? Is that our modern man? I feel like that's not me, and I'm kind of a modern man. I just turned 30, but last month I would have been a 20-something like you're talking about.
Right.
What's changed, and what What is it that you see as the issues that modern men need to make sure they focus on?
Well, if you touched on the back cover of the book, the pilot was Major Robin Olds. This was in 1944, and he was a P-51 pilot and a squadron commander at the age of 23. Do you know a single 23-year-old, except the few that are in the military today, that are doing that? Now, back in the 40s, pretty much any 23-year-old of the day could be slotted in and trained and have this kind of position. Of course, Major Olds was a special fellow, West Point grad and so forth. But we had a better cadre of humanity, I think, to draw from for military service. Today, I don't think we have the same quality pool of people, certainly not of men.
How much of that is because the modern man probably wouldn't want to join the modern military? I mean, if you go out and join up now, you're going to be sitting in a bunker in Nevada with a joystick controlling drones.
Well, that's true, but it's kind of incidental. You know, let's say it's World War II all over again with the Nazis and the Japanese and so forth. We don't have the quality of people to fight World War II over again. You know, forget about the bunker in Nevada with a joystick. We just don't have quality people like we did 70 years ago. That's my issue. And the parallel between these two males on the back of the book cover, one, you know, a stud, a he-man, a real guy. World War II or not, he would have been that same guy versus this little fellow, you know, pimping for Obamacare, going, you know, come home for the holidays, have a hot chocolate, and let's talk about health care. I mean, my God, a kid like that would have been laughed off the streets in the 1930s.
And I think that particular
way.
I think that particular picture, the ad you're talking about for the Obamacare thing was actually an ad, I believe, about how if you're 26, you can stay on your parents' health care with Obamacare. So it's basically he is the poster child of extending adolescence, which I think is
absolutely
a big thing you're talking about here. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, about the I mean, I think that's as much of a problem with the modern American male, female, everybody than anything, of the extension of adolescence.
Sure. When I was an actual adolescent, meaning, you know, before I was 18 years old, still a minor, you know, my parents said, hey, when you're 18, you're out of the house, you're on your own. And this was something they told me through my teenage years. This is something I expected. So it wasn't like, yeah, you're in the house until you're 26 and, you know, maybe till you're 30, depending on what the culture or the law, you know, will support. An 18-year-old guy was considered a man back then. And he was out of the house. He was self-supporting. He had learned how to act like a man in society, how to woo a woman, how to support a wife, start a family, and so forth. This isn't expected of kids today. You know, no one is telling their children at home, hey, when you're 18, you're out of the house and you're on your own. That I've never heard that.
I think the expectations is an important point to make. And I first heard that from you in Boston's Gun Bible. You had a chapter, and the basic gist of it was women civilize men, i.e.,
oh, that's right. Yeah.
Women's expectations are what lead to men's aspirations.
And absolutely.
That really stuck with me. I think there's more of an interplay between the two sexes too.
Sure.
But I still say that quote to this day about the culture. Where do you think if that's sort of one of the causes or the roots of where modern manhood is? What's the root of that? Because I, as a new father, I've got a 4-month-old daughter. I feel like it's up to me in the first place to make sure that she expects certain things of any suitor. Is it sort of a circular thing to where men and moms aren't expecting or teaching their daughters to be the women that civilize men?
I think that's there's a large degree of that. You know, I'm not going to blame just the women. You know, men are lazy. You know, we're efficient in a sense. I'll defend us in a way. You know, we're going to do only as much work as it takes to get the job done, and, you know, often at the last minute. You know, men are only as good and capable and competent as basically women generally insist upon. And women haven't been insisting upon it. Now, why not? Is it because their fathers didn't tell them to insist upon it? The fathers weren't good role models as men for their daughters? I think that's part of it. I think it's a sliding scale of quality that's been happening. We've just been curdling in our quality of humanity in general. And I think it began with men, because men are leaders. Leaders of their households, leaders in business. And, you know, we have to set the example. And men need to cowboy up, to man up. And I think this whole remedial men's movement that we're seeing today, like theartofmanliness.com and many books along this subject, are a backlash of, you know, where have our men gone? You know, we got to get them back, because everyone's suffering because of it. So, yeah, fathers need to train their daughters. Look, make the guy jump through some hoops, just like in the animal kingdom. You know, you don't get to be a male sparrow with a family unless female sparrow has signed off on your I'm incredible, check me out, you know, kind of thing.
And unless the sparrow was able to avoid getting eaten by the neighborhood cats. And, you know, right. I think that the government protectionism over the years has had a lot to do with draining the independence out of men and women. And you actually said in Boston's Gun Bible that women – women and men do well together and do better together than alone. But if a woman has a gun, she can do better alone than a man can do alone. Because without a woman to civilize a man is Al Bundy sitting on the couch, scratching, farting, and burping.
Yeah, he sure is. It's very difficult, I think, for men to self-civilize without the loving influence of women in his life, particularly his wife. A woman can go through a handgun course and, you know, doesn't need a man. She has a career, doesn't need a man for support. She has a handgun to protect herself and so forth. But men get lost in that shuffle. And, you know, it's showing up. There are young guys out there. If you look at a single site of, a range of guys, 25 to 30, man, are there a bunch of goobers and gompers just grinning from the page. It's like, wow, do you have anything to offer? It's like embarrassing. They're like old children. So, now I'm starting to sound like some old bastard. Yeah, in my day.
Yeah. You are.
But it's true, you know.
Well, I will say that I think that's a little less true in Wyoming and the Mountain West than other places.
I totally agree.
We'll talk more with Boston Tea Party, Kenneth Royce, author of Modules for Manhood, when we get back from this trip to the market, to the free market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
Brink of Freedom is a community-based network and magazine whose mission is to provide you with the information you need on your walk to freedom. From homesteading and gardening to tactical and firearms, Brink of Freedom provides everything you will need to gain the knowledge to be self-sufficient. If government doesn't like it, Brink of Freedom will cover it. Come share your knowledge and gain the knowledge of industry professionals within the community. Become a premium member and gain access to unlimited content and discounts on products and services from our merchants. Use the discount code FIENDS at brinkoffreedom.net.
All right, thank you for joining us once again. I am Nima Vedati here on the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. We've got Michael W. Dean, the show's other host, out there in what's the name of your aircraft, your dirigible today?
You've got a different one, right? I've borrowed Flyoming 1. It's a blimp, and I'm flying over Recluse, Wyoming, my favorite named town. And you know, when you and I met, we met Nima over a mutual love of music and liberty. And you came over to our house. My wife cooked some buffalo chili for you. And then I said, let me show you my guns, because you were, you could quote Rothbard till the cows come home, and you could quote Spooner, and you're a good little libertarian, but you were totally in favor of the right to gun ownership, but you didn't own any. And
that's true.
I took you out shooting, and I gave you Boston's Gun Bible to read. And I'm not the greatest rifleman. I'm not a rifleman. I'm pretty good with a pistol, but I'm not very good with a rifle. But I've taken classes from Boston and taken Appleseed classes to the point where I may not be a good rifleman, but I'm a good rifle teacher. And I taught you to shoot and took you out, passing that information on to you without even really having it myself. And like the fifth time I took you shooting ever that you'd gone shooting, you hit a dinner plate at 380 yards with a Mosin Nagant with iron sights. Yeah, so,
right. But there might have been some luck involved there, but hey, I'll take the credit.
You did it more than once. So you had a question for Mr. Boston Tea Party, Mr. Kenneth Royce, author of Modules for Manhood, the new book that's out. You can get on Amazon or you can get from javelinpress.com. What's your question there, Nima?
Right. So, Boston, I kind of feel like where women these days, or girls, young girls, learn to get their expectations for their men is probably more often than not their other girlfriends at public school. And I also get the sense that public schools are not the most conducive environment to the manliness that you're talking about here in your book. Are you a proponent of homeschooling, or how do you see as sort of circumventing this this sort of prison system that kids get thrown into, and it's called education?
Well, I mean, some public schools locally in small towns are still pretty good, but anybody really needs to read John Taylor Gatto's work on public education. It's just a must. Go to johntaylorgatto.com, G-A-T-T-O, to understand the history and the goal and the philosophy behind public education. So it's pretty bad because it's basically training people how to disconnect important subjects of life from each other, to not look at life holistically as an experience and how things are related to each other. And they break up subjects, by 50-minute time blocks and so forth, with dinner bells ringing, Pavlovian, period bells ringing and so forth. And they come out of it pretty damaged psychically and don't know how to think for themselves, don't know how to reason a question out, how to find their own information, how to form a thesis and so forth. So it's a very bad environment for education, regardless of it's a boy or a girl. But, homeschooling is not for everyone, and private schooling is expensive, or I should say too expensive. So, it's a dilemma. And it's a very cruel dilemma that the government has placed families in, because you're forced through the property tax racket of paying for public education, so to speak. But you don't get a rebate from it if you, want to send your children to private education or homeschool. You know, if you wanted to be fair in a government level on this sort of thing, you'd levy an education tax and then rebate it to the parents to pay however they wanted to for their children's education. It could be a government school, it could be a private school, or it could be a home school. But, to levy the tax and then not rebate it back for people who want to send their children elsewhere is just evil,
right? I don't know if fair and government belong in the same sentence. I definitely get what you're getting at. I mean, we want to have my wife be the primary raiser of the kids and be home with them and be teaching them and homeschooling them. But not only are we going to forego any potential income from her working since she's doing this, but we're also going to be paying as if our kid was going to a public school.
I really like in your book, I like a lot of things about it. I really like this part, the four types of people. Which are you? Cop-outs, holdouts, dropouts, and all-outs. Cop-outs have no goals. Holdouts have goals but no commitment. Dropouts have goals but they've lost commitment. And all-outs set goals, commit, and pay the price to win. And you do have a section in here called School as Prison, which kind of breaks down and then extends on what you were just saying. And I like that there's you use a lot of manly Americans as examples, but it's not Americo-centric. Like, you have an example in here about a barefoot African boy making it to college and how
fabulous story.
Why can't Americans do that as much as other places? Exactly. We'll be back with more with Boston Tea Party, Kenneth Royce on the Freedom Fiends after we trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
All right, Freedom Fiends, thank you once again for joining us. I am Nima Fadati. We've got Michael W. Dean on the other end of the interwebs and our special guest, Boston Tea Party, a.k.a. Kenneth Royce. And we're going to be going over some more of his book here, Modules for Manliness.
Modules for Manhood. Hour, Manhood.
Manhood.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yes, a proper man actually reads the title of the book when he's about to say
it. You had a Bill Buepert question, Nima. And Bill Buepert is a co-host on my new show at night. And we've been becoming really good friends. He kind of reminds me of Boston in a lot of ways, and I think they know each other or at least respect each other's work.
Yeah, and Bill's a very tactical guy.
What's your question there, Nima?
Well, I was going to say that after we talk about the book, we're going to have a no holds barred session with Boston here.
He's going to fight himself, and there can only be one winner.
Anyone can win.
Only one. There can be only one. So Bill likes to use this as his sig line in emails. It's a quote from Heraclitus. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. From about 500 BC, and the quote goes like this: "Of every 100 men, 10 shouldn't even be there. 80 are nothing but targets. 9 are real fighters. We are lucky to have them. They make the battle. Ah, but the one of them is a warrior, and he will bring the others back." And we were asking Boston. I was asking him if he's ever done an MMA.
Of those 100, then there's the webmaster, and that's me.
That's you. Yeah. Yes. Boston said, no, he's never done any MMA, but you've done, is it called the Best Warrior Competition, or what is that you've done there, Boston?
It was an Arizona competition held in the late 90s, no, into 2000, called Warrior of the Year, WATI.
Warrior of the Year, okay.
Yeah, we had mainly West Coast martial artists, a lot of really good stick and knife people from the Philippines, like Wendell Paris, the Dulce Paris Eskrima variant. We had a Secret Service guy. We had an Air Force sniper. Lots of shooting type of folks. And I tried to train hard and do well. And fortunately, I placed in the top three all 3 years that I was in it. And nearly won, the last time I was there, nearly won first place with a $3,000 sword prize, but got edged out and got second. So I wouldn't consider myself a dedicated martial artist, but I think I'm going to change that. I have to be careful what I sink my teeth into because I really go there. So I've got to be careful of what takes over my life, you know, here and there. Flying is doing that right now, aviation. But I do like to fight. I do like the warrior mindset. It feels good to be in it. And you never know when you're going to use it.
Is that a requirement for manhood, according to your book, Modules for Manhood?
I think it generally is. Even, if we're not in war as a country, every human being on the planet is fighting something, somewhere, sometime, maybe even right now. And so to fight requires a fighting mindset to win, a winning mindset. And I think it is part of being a man. I think a fellow should know how to competently defend himself with his bare hands, with edged weapons, with projectile weapons, with blunt force weapons. Yeah, I think it should be in a man. I think hunting also should be in there too, in a man's, you know, soul's arsenal. Even though not everyone really has it, I think he's missing something if he is lacking that. But yeah, definitely be a warrior. I hit on this in the volume 2 of Modules for Manhood coming out in the summer. It's a chapter called Fighting. I don't call it defending or, I call it fighting. Call it for what it is.
You wrote a book on African big game hunting. What's that called?
Yeah. Safari Dreams. The subtitle is A Guide to Your Hunt in Africa. I think I'm quoting my subtitle correctly. I went over in 2005 for the first time. And on the way back from Tanzania, on the plane, literally, I'm jotting down notes of what I hadn't learned in the stack of books that I used to try to prepare myself for my own first hunt. And, that turned into a book itself. Even though I'd only, by the time the book had come out, been on 3 safaris, maybe 40, 50 animals taken, so forth. You know, not a lot of experience over there. But I seem to have a knack for discerning what is lacking out there in the literary world in a how-to kind of book. I've done it many times, and I was astonished that after all the 100 years of Americans going on safari to Africa, that there still wasn't a book like Safari Dreams. So
yeah, people look at the diversity of your book subjects and they're like, wow, it almost seems random. I get it because this is how I do stuff. You make the things that don't exist that you wish existed. And I think Modules for Manhood is a really good, I wouldn't say final chapter in that. I know you were going to write two more and you're going to write probably a lot of books after that. Maybe, maybe not.
Absolutely.
If you didn't, you retired, I wouldn't say, Boston owes the world more books. I'd say, good, he's earned it, but I hope you write more. So in about 8 minutes, can you give us a cliff notes of the whole book?
Yeah, remember, this is volume one of three. There's 35 chapters to the whole series. I had originally tried to write the thing as one book, but by the time it had reached the page count of Boston's Gun Bible of 850 pages, there's a binding problem, physically to print a book that's larger than that. So my printer was like, well, we can go a little, bigger, but not by much.
There's a mag capacity for book page length.
Exactly. Yeah. 2 inches or something like that. I had to break it up. And besides, even if the thing was ready at 900 pages, I wasn't ready to put it out. I had a lot of editing to do. But the first third of the book was ready. So I thought, better a decent book today than a perfect book tomorrow kind of thing, as George Patton once said. But volume one, I'll just read the titles out. And then that's the cliff notes. You can get an idea of where I'm going with this. Volume one is generally just sort of getting yourself sorted out with understanding how the world works, understanding what kind of personality you have, understanding what it takes to deal with people. So the titles are this, Understanding. Chapter two is Thinking, Truth, and Wisdom. Then comes Integrity and Character. Chapter four is Conquering. And what I mean by conquering yourself, we all have fear, depression, laziness, anger, impatience, and pride to deal with in some, variants. Pride usually being the last one and the hardest one to overcome. Chapter five, individuality, courage, and manhood. I think of volume one, this is probably the most male, man-oriented chapter. The rest could be read by a 15-year-old girl and she'd get a lot out of it. Chapter six, getting along better with people. Seven is communicating, writing, speaking, giving a speech, so forth. Chapter eight was kind of a surprise how it sort of evolved. Persuading is a skill. And I originally called it selling, but I realized, what you're doing when you're trying to sell is you're trying to persuade. So it went more basic than just selling a product. Chapter nine, 10 is learning and training. And the last chapter, which I think is probably the best of the book and one of the longest, is doing, all about action, how to translate what we hope are internal imperatives to get something done to actually doing it, Everyone talks about what they are gonna do, what they would have done, what they should have done. But man, action at the end of the day is the only thing that matters. One quote on Safari Dreams is, action turns daydreams into memories. Nice. You want to be daydreaming about what you would like to do, or do you want to recall what you had done? And the only difference between the two is that you did it, action. So chapter 11, doing action, is very important. I think I've got some really good insights in that to really get someone out of his rut or his shell or his laziness or whatever to having a wake of accomplishment in his life.
Well, so help me out then, Boston. what advice do you have for me, a 30, recently turned 30, wife and new daughter, 4 months old? If you could give me a piece of advice for the future, what would it be?
Well, where do you think you're lacking in knowledge or maturity or experience? I mean, give me a hint here.
Choosing. Choosing what my goals are. I feel like I'm on 12 different tracks and I can't sit on one and stay in it for very long.
Very interesting. I talk a lot in my book about a man finding his purpose. And once you find your purpose, the choice is easy. There's no choice at all. You just can't help but do it. Yeah. So maybe look back in your life, your young life so far, and recount things you've done, things you've accomplished. Write them out on paper. And then on paper, look for a common thread between those two. You know, those three, you know, those many things you've done. Look for a common thread, because that common thread is going to enunciate your purpose, at least what it is, you know, right now. When you're 50 or 60, you might have a different purpose in life. But right now, you, if you look for it, there will be a common thread, Nima, of things you've done, whether it's your desire to educate people, whether it's a desire to invent something, whether it's a desire to sell something, help people. That will come off the page. And then from that, see how that purpose maybe can be understood in one of three categories which could overlap: dealing with people, dealing with information, dealing with things. This is something I learned a long time ago out of the great book called What Color Is Your Parachute? You know, we all deal with people, information, and things. Sometimes uniquely, you know, an accountant deals with information purely. A salesman or a massage therapist deals with people. A mechanic deals with things. Sometimes there's overlap, but generally one will be stronger than the other two. So, you know, what is it about your life historically that you deal with people or information or things? And then in what capacity? What, you know, what do you like to do with people? Entertain them, educate them, heal them, and feed them, you know, so forth. So look to yourself. The answer to your own purpose is largely within yourself. You know, it's also a spiritual thing too. But just talking about what you can derive out of your own self, a lot of the answers are there if you'll start to, right, you know, try to draw it out of it.
So this book is more of a set of tools that you intend for people to use to work on themselves, rather than a series of prescriptions for what people should do and you should do this or that. It's more of something you can take, read, and apply strategies to yourself. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. Chapter one primarily is drawing the truth of you out of yourself, and then knowing how that relates to the world. That's chapter one, and it's a long chapter. It's like 40 pages. From there, yeah, there are some prescriptions, as you call it. There are ways to deal with people that are universally polite, universally ethical, and so forth. So I outline that. You know, especially like, you know, truth, telling the truth. What is a lie? I have a lot about, you know, what is lying and what is truth.
We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Boston Tea Party, Kenneth Royce, talking about modules for manhood. After we go exchange some agorist silver for things in Agora Valley. We'll be back.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vedati. We've got Michael W. Dean on the other end of the intertubes, and we've got Boston Tea Party, a.k.a. Kenneth Royce, here talking to us about his new book. Modules for Manhood. Yeah, yeah. And he was going to give me a lesson, a brief lesson about the importance of decisiveness somebody's manhood. And I read a quote this morning from Hunter S. Thompson on my Twitter feed, and I think this kind of sums it up, and it was kind of an aha, and maybe Boston's going to help sell it even further here, but the quote goes like this: a man who procrastinates in his choosing will inevitably have his choice made for him by circumstance. And that really rings true to stuff that's happened in my life, Boston. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you say about decisiveness in your new book?
Decisiveness is actually in chapter 14 in the volume 2, but basically, you know, you've got to get your information, and there's a process of dealing with, you know, competing choices, and do I do this now, do I wait for this later, and so forth. But decisiveness is, I think, a manly trait and something that women enjoy. I see couples out on a date, you know, and they're in a restaurant and, you know, he's asking her, where do you want to sit or where do you want to order? He's asking her, he's deferring to her how the evening's going to go. I think women generally appreciate a man going, you know, I've chosen our restaurant and we're going to be sitting here. I have our table reserved and so forth. So it is a manly trait. And, you know, if you're married and have a family, it's going to be a paramount trait. Because there are going to be times when you need to decide, and it's on you.
Yeah.
You can't really have a democracy of two people, you know.
Are you kind of the school of go with your gut, or what kind of decision making process is it that you are a fan of?
If you've got enough information, I think the gut, you know, which we call fuzzy logic. There's a mathematical branch dealing with what's called fuzzy logic, trying to get at the heart of what is a gut decision. The gut is important if you have enough information on all your choices. And also, speaking of gut, listen to your wife's intuition. You know, if you're equally divided between, you know, a couple of choices and your wife says, I really feel we need to, you know, choose A versus B, I would certainly heed that, if not go with it. They have a gut that is superior to ours for this sort of thing, especially regarding people. You'll hear it often where, you know, wives will say to their husbands, there's just something about that guy I don't like, you know, and don't blow that off. That's important. But get a lot of information and then go with your gut and then have a feedback loop afterwards. You know, was it a good decision? Was it not? It's often better to make almost lousy decision, because a decision is made and you can correct it later, versus just wallowing around like driftwood on a sea and having you know, the tide take you somewhere else. So just get over your fear.
A thing that I really like about this book is, while you do use, and I touched on this before, like you use, you know, American examples a lot, but you use examples from everywhere. And that's something I like too about your gun books. Like, you know, you don't really have patriotism to something you're told to like. Like, you don't say American guns are the best, buy USA, like any good gun of any nation you like, if it's a good gun. And
sure,
you also don't have the stereotypical male role model ideas. Like, you know, you put on the back a fighter pilot and you put the sissy boy as the contrary, as the contrast, which is kind of a, like, okay, I'm picking this up in a bookstore, I need to get this in 1 second, and that works.
Exactly. But bookends of maleness, right?
Yeah, if I'm going to judge a book by its cover, that will help me judge what's in this book by its cover.
Right.
But, you know, you don't have ideas like, it doesn't seem like you have ideas like, you have to go work with your hands on the oil rigs and bust Bronx on the ranch. Like, I believe that this book would be very useful for someone who wants to be a fine art painter, and you wouldn't call that guy a sissy boy if he did it with integrity and with you know, personal conviction and force. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Ooh, I've got a great historical vignette just about that. How much time do we have?
Oh, 30 about, seconds? Yeah, 30 seconds at least.
It's a famous story.
Ah, you know what? We blew it. I blew it.
Okay.
We'll be back for hour two of Modules for Manhood with Kenneth Royce, Boston Tea Party, on the Freedom Fiends.
Read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, there's some Squiggles from Death Clocks.
And you arms listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
All right, everybody, we're back on the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. Thank you for joining us in Hour 2 with me, Nima Vedati, here in Central Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there somewhere, undisclosed location in the middle of the rural Mountain West.
And recluse. We've also got, I mean, recluse Wyoming, population recluse Wyoming. 15 today. That's where the Wormabago is parked today. Yeah, and we're talking to Boston Tea Party, Kenneth Royce, author of Modules for Manhood, Volume 1, and a bunch of other cool books that have influenced Nima and I. And part two, this second hour, we're going to talk about everything. It's the no holes barred Boston fights himself, and there can only be one winner. We're going to finish up with the book. But Boston had a pithy story to tell that answered a question that I asked at the end of the last hour about why is this book not just for manly men doing things like wrestling bears for a living and shooting down people over the Pacific Ocean in fighter jets, but also for manly fine artists and things like that.
Yeah, I'm going to quote this in volume two, and I don't recall the names of the personalities, but it's basically 16th century Japan samurai culture. And it's in the marketplace of this town. And this tea serving master, you know, tea service is a very important cultural component in Japan, even today. And apparently back then there were masters at this. And anyway, this tea serving master is going through the marketplace and he bumps the scabbard of this samurai. And he turns and he apologizes profusely. But the samurai has a bit of an attitude. He's not very chill, and he challenges his tea master to a duel. He goes, "I will see you tomorrow at dawn. You know, be there, coward." And the tea master scuttles away and talks to a warrior friend of his. You know, "What do I do? This guy's going to cut me in half tomorrow. I don't know how to use a sword. I'm a tea master." And his warrior friend says, "Well, let's talk about this. Meanwhile, you know, serve me some tea. Let's have some tea and let's talk about it." So the tea master starts to serve tea, the preparation and the delivery and so forth. And he's in his element, right? Because he is a master. He's a black belt in serving tea. And the warrior says, "Show him that face. Show him that resolve. Show him that brimming confidence." So the tea master goes the next morning to the crossroads at dawn. The samurai is waiting for him. And they're staring each other face to face. And the samurai says, "I cannot defeat you," turns and walks away. So everyone, even if they're a painter, a tea master, someone who arranges flowers, everyone can have a core steel rod of manliness within him. It's just exhibited in different ways. He doesn't have to be a fighter pilot. He can be a guy serving tea.
Right. And so the manliness doesn't come from the external job that you're doing, the wrestling the bear, the being a tool pusher on an oil field, but it comes
from—
It can help, right.
Yeah.
Right. But the main thing is the dedication and the passion that you put into something, the focus, the that kind of thing?
Absolutely. You know, when a man knows his purpose from top to bottom, it just shows no matter what he does, like in the case of this tea master. And, you know, not everyone can be a fighter pilot. I'm no fighter pilot, but do I have to be one to, you know, write a book like this? No, because there are similarities of men. You know, I've seen men who were 12 years old. You could already tell this is already a man. You know, he's still young. I've seen men who were 5'2", and they probably had to take a lot of crap throughout their lives, but you could tell he's a man. This is a masculine fellow. He's not an imposing fellow physically. But even a, you know, a 6'4" man wouldn't want to get in a scrap with a 5'2" man
Filipino,
just because he realizes
a Filipino, you know, stick fighter.
oh my God, stay away from those people. Wow.
Yeah.
Those are some of the best fighters on the planet, I think. Also Brazilian, you know, grapplers, the wrestlers, those people have fought since out of the cradle. And it's just part of, you know, being alive as a man. It's big stuff.
Do you think that some of the countries that have, for instance, some of the better, you know, hand-to-hand combat fighters in general, like the Philippines and Japan and China, do you think that some of that is based on the history of those countries to where basically sure. you would die if you couldn't do that?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. It's still the case today. Yeah. And they laugh at us soft American men, and they've got a point. You know, we have our little conveniences, and our women run our lives, and yeah, men around the world laugh at American men.
How do you see Wyoming and the Mountain West is different in that aspect?
Oh, it's quite a bit improved over, you know, many other parts of the country, especially the cosmopolitan areas. I dated a woman in New York, and she wanted me to kind of turn metrosexual in my attire and carry like a man purse and wear tortoiseshell glasses. And that's like, do you know who you're with? I mean, are you kidding me? You know, if you want one of those, there's a zillion of them to choose from. But no, I'm not going that way. Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, out here in the West, you know, we've got guys that are, you know, cowboys, ranchers, but even if they're not, they're still living in a cowboy and ranching, you know, culture. There's still that ethos where a man is expected to handle his problems, to be responsible. You know, the whole, you know, your word is your bond, handshake deal. The stuff is for real out here.
Yeah, I think it's very, that's very much true. But I in my personal experience, it actually suffers in a way that I've seen in the Mountain West. this may be heresy to some people, but I've noticed overall that a lot of companies here can't do the mm-hmm. internet and can't do, like, you, if you watch the local TV station, it's a high def station, but all of the ads are low def with like web graphics in it. And that's, right. You know, that may sound ridiculous in a conversation of manliness, but I don't think it sounds ridiculous in a conversation of well-roundedness of like,
right.
You know, just because you move large metal tubes for a living doesn't mean somebody in your family shouldn't learn to, you know, make a decent graphic for high def or something.
No, I would agree. It's not a mutually exclusive manliness with, you know, high competence, or at least contracting out some high competence for right. the arts if
yeah.
you need it. Yeah.
Yeah. You could do that over the, you could hire them people, them metrosexuals in New York and LA to do it right for you.
Exactly.
You don't ever have to meet them or see them right. or look at their ridiculous horn rim glasses and exactly. fluffy man jammas. But yeah. Yeah. So there's some interesting differences in this book with your other books. And I want to know if Boston has changed, or if your attitude has changed, or if you've just focused on something else. I mean, your previous stuff, it appealed to people who want to rattle their sabers and say, we won't take any more. We won't take any more.
Right.
But, you know, and it's not, I'm not going to denigrate it by saying, and now you're just telling kids to brush their teeth. There's a lot more mm-hmm. than that. But this definitely almost comes off like a kindler, gentler, but the same strength Boston. Have you changed in what you think the way to make your mark in the world is?
Definitely. It's hard to put my finger on it, but you know, I've gotten older. I'm middle aged now versus in my 20s when I first started, you know, writing and had my first book out. So I would be embarrassed if I was in my 70s still writing Boston's Gun Bible. Not that I'm embarrassed by the book, but I'd be embarrassed by my stasis. So yeah, I've moved on in some ways, and I'm trying to get at more and more core issues. I guess if there's any thing that is consistent about me is I try to get to the bottom of stuff. I try to get to what's core. And Modules for Manhood is attempting to reach something more core than I've talked about before. And, you know, who are you as a person? Who are you as a man? It's important. Your family's depending on you. Your community and your country is depending on you. So I'm trying to get at that and increase the quality of each individual. And if we do that, the collective quality can't help but rise in the same way, and then we'll have much less fighting to do. We'll have much less, you know, standing our ground to do, just because the country's just not going to put up with such government oppression, voting in politicians in a kleptocracy. If we raise people upright, it's like, hey, I'm responsible for my own lives. Why am I whining to Congress about the rules of baseball all of a sudden? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just unmanly. You wouldn't do it, you know.
So for you, that's the new thought about a successful strategy for more liberty in our society and in the world is to start with ourselves, start with our kids and people we know and teach them how to be independent, strong-willed people who aren't going to take crap rather than just yelling at a bunch of people who are already ruined and somehow are in charge of everything in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, precisely. If we're not raising a new crop of healthy, strong individual men, what's the point of, you know, the Second Amendment 30 years from now? They won't be interested. They'll be, you know, such sissies, they won't even own a gun, won't be interested in hunting, you know, whatever. So, yeah, we've got to get back to the basics.
Right.
That's something, you know, you said something in Boston's Gun Bible that a lot of gun owners – when guns are outlawed, will quietly move over to radio-controlled helicopter hobbies.
Yeah, they're hobbyists.
Yeah. Right. Now, I wonder about the Second Amendment and the guns and the line in the sand. You know, this thing that's going on in Nevada, and Nemo wants to ask you at some point, first of all, why aren't you on the interwebs tweeting every day so he can sit and read your thoughts about what's happening in the news on his chromed robot turd?
Right.
Which is what we call cell phones that have internet.
You know, I've only got so many hours in a day, just like anybody else, and I have to pick and choose what I spend my time on. I've got two more, you know, volumes of Modules for Manhood to come out with this year. I've got other books I'm going to write. You know, I'm not a pundit. I'm not out there with some daily opinion on the matter of the minute. I've never been that way. I'm more of a thoughtful, deep thinker on certain issues, and I want to take my time getting at the bottom of it. You know, someone once wrote, email is great for people who need to stay on top of things, but I'm a writer, and my profession is getting at the bottom of things. And I loved that line. So that's why I don't have Facebook, I don't have Twitter, and so forth, and I don't even post much on my own forum. So I've got to spend a lot of time doing what I do, and otherwise it's not going to get done. So, you know, If you
it's a function of
books,
decisiveness and achieving the goals you have outlined as important to you.
It is, and what I feel is my own purpose, you know, in all this. I don't think the world's bereft of people on Twitter, you know, with an opinion. So.
That's very true. All right, we'll have lots more with Boston Tea Party, a.k.a. Kenneth Royce. Stick around for more Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. ShinyBadges.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out CreamyRadioAudio.com. That's CreamyRadioAudio.com.
All right, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vedati. We've got Michael W. Dean here as well, and Boston Tea Party, a.k.a. Kenneth Royce. And we're trying to get on a fan, a 15-year-old boy who's actually read Modules for Manhood and loved it. He says it's changed his life. Tell us a little bit about Nick, Michael.
Well, we don't have him on yet because he's not sitting around reading his Twitter feed. He's a yak farmer. He actually took out a loan to buy 4 yak. And I do want to ask him, you know, why? Why yaks? You know, milk, felt? What are you going to do with the yaks? Meat? So Boston, all these people who say there's a line in the sand and we're going to use our rifles for a Second Amendment solution, when they crossed that line, didn't they cross that line about 208 years ago during the Whiskey Rebellion? And isn't it crossed every time someone's messed with by the government?
Yeah, sure. Well, the people have a history of just going in reverse, you know, and just moving the line, you know, backwards. That's just human nature. It's no, you know, slur against Americans historically. It's gotten certainly worse, I would say, since the 1930s. But, you know, the hard part is in a modern technological society with all our goodies that we've created for ourselves and our comforts, it's difficult to know that, you know, these things are in jeopardy by taking a stand for principle in, you know, a lethal confrontation with government. So, you know, I can empathize with it. You know, I haven't gone out there and stormed a barricade myself, you know, with my rifle in hand either. So, but at some point, I think things will get bad enough and there will be enough or high enough percentage of people that just won't take it. And you'll have an irreducible core of freedom fighting Americans that is large enough to make a difference. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, in the next 2 years or 20 years, but, you know, something will come to a head.
Isn't that just going to look like 1,000 ruby ridges, though?
I think that there could be 12 ruby ridges, but not necessarily 1,000. I don't think the powers that be have, you know, those kind of numbers. You know, they'd have to require the local co-option of police and county, and that's not assured yet. They're trying hard by, you know, federal Uncle Santa giving all the cool toys to the local cops you know, uniformly arming local police with the same kind of training and equipment. But we're not there yet. So I think if anyone's concerned locally for their own freedom, that, you know, get to know your sheriff, get to know your police chief, and make sure that if they're not on the same page, you know, turn them into a patriot or elect one to replace him.
Now, there's advice in a lot in the liberty community and the hip hop rap community of never talk to police. You know, in the sense of, and even in Boston's gun, I mean, you and the police, there are things of like, you know, don't volunteer, don't be friendly with them. But that's,
absolutely.
I think that's in a fishing expedition capacity. Do you feel it's different if you're, you know, let's say renewing your driver's license and you see the sheriff and you know his name and you, would you say hi to him and chat him up or not?
Oh, absolutely. I talked today to a guy who's running for sheriff in his county. He's on the SO as a deputy, but he's going to run for sheriff. I absolutely talk to him. You know, my advice about not talking to them is only concerns itself in an adversarial relationship. If someone gets pulled over or, you know, accosted on the street, the kind of thing. But no, if you see a cop having lunch or a sheriff or something like that, yeah. Especially if you're in a small town and everyone knows each other, absolutely have a human relationship with another human, especially when it has a lot to benefit you by doing it.
You gave
and by having a lot to benefit you, you mean by showing them that you're human too, and maybe they'll remember that down the line when they see you driving down the road.
Perfect. Precisely. I mean, in modern law enforcement training, there's a whole lot of us versus them, us versus them. And
Nick is back.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, we got Nick on the line. Are you there, Nick?
Oh, great.
Nick, are you there?
Hey, I'm reading Modules for Manhood currently.
Great, thank you.
I really, really like it. I've been trying to adopt these traits that you're talking about, you know, hard work ethic and, you know, taking charge, right? And I really dig it.
Excellent. What have you learned? What's been the surprising thing so far you've learned?
Hang on, Nick. We're gonna go to a break here and go to the market, and we'll come back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, Inoculation from Indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com. Meowbit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. Meowbit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address and our free software, Meowbit. Go to meowbit.com. That's M-E-O-W-B-I-T.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. I'm Nima Vidati here in Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in Recluse, Wyoming. Yeah. We've also got a couple other people here with us. We've got a full fiend force here. We've got regular fiend fan Nick, and we've also got Boston Tea Party, a.k.a. Kenneth Royce. Now, Nick has actually read or is reading Boston's book. Michael, do you have something you want to say to Nick?
Yeah, Nick is a fan of the Fiends and of my nighttime show, Michael Dean After Dark. And he's called in a bunch of times, and we were giving away microphones. Everyone gets a microphone. You get a microphone. You get a microphone. Look under your seat. You get a microphone. And Nick got a microphone. He's starting his own Liberty podcast, and I'm giving him some tech advice on that. Cool. And I had no idea he was 15 when I first talked to him. He carries himself and sounds a lot older than that. And he's a yak farmer, which I think is mind-blowing, in the Pacific Northwest. I agree. And I want to hear a little bit first about the yak farming. And most young men don't say, I'm gonna get yaks and farm them. And I think that's really cool. What do you do with the yaks, and how did you come to get the yaks, Nick? Yak about that.
All right. So I've been interested in farming for a little bit, about maybe a year. I like the idea of self-sustainability and self-reliability. And I decided that I wanted to do something different, be unique, you know, mm-hmm. not being a conformist. So I found yaks. I thought, well, yaks sound pretty cool. I'm going to look into it. So I did. Turns out there was a guy near me. He had a big yak farm, big yak ranch. And so just recently we went to go to an auction, scouting out prices, and we decided, you know what, let's do it now. Let's buy some. So I bought four yaks, awesome. Got a small herd. I got two little bull calves, and I've got two pregnant cows. So the babies are going to come along the way, and I'll have six by summer. Wow. I'll be starting my small herd.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And what I plan to do with them, I plan on milking them, and I plan on selling the calves for meat. Right. And then hair as well. So it's the hair is quite a bit like wool.
Yeah,
they have two layers of hair. One is a thick overcoat that protects them from rain, water, and the under stuff is soft and provides insulation.
You know, there's a book that Boston wrote that this is a blast from his past, and he's going to be like, "Ugh, you're bringing that up." But it's called Surviving Y2K. And it was a how to survive if the society hit the fan book. And it's got a lot of things in it that are far beyond still Y2K compliant about self-sustainability, right, and living off the grid or partially off the grid. I'd recommend that book. You can probably buy it for 5 cents on Amazon plus $10 shipping, I think, at this point. Is it still around? Can you still get it?
It is. It's the only book of mine that I can sell cheaper to the public than Amazon, because I sell them at I sell them at half price, $11 plus shipping. But Amazon pays full price minus their standard discount, which comes to more than $11. So yeah, Nick, if you want it from me, just shoot me an email. Michael can get you in touch with me, and I'll just send you a copy.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
Awesome.
Yeah. dedicated to your new yak ranching outfit, which I think is awesome because, A, it's entrepreneurial, which is very cool. You know, when you're young, you start something like that. I learned so much from high school and college having my first business. And B, it's agricultural, which is another layer of responsibility and knowledge and experience you're going to get. So even if a few years down the road you decide, well, I'll just sell all my yaks and do something else, the experience you're going to get and what this is going to make in you, you can't buy in any college.
Oh, for sure. That's the reason I'm getting into it so early is I don't really trust college. And if this is what I want to do
exactly.
The rest of my life, I want to figure it out now before I start planning.
That's very wise. You know, the world only cares about what you can deliver to them. What can you do for me? What have you done for me lately? I mean, that's what the world wants. They want results. And if you start training yourself to be able to deliver results in life, especially along a common theme of stuff that you really like to do and you can't wait to wake up, you know, in the morning to do it the next day, dude, you're on your way.
I think that's really important, and I think that's something that's lost a lot in modern society. I think a lot of people think, I'm wonderful, and that's all I need, and they don't realize that the world doesn't care if you're wonderful.
Yeah.
They want to know what you can do for the world.
Yeah. The largest employer in the next within 10 years is going to be self. Self-employed would be the largest category of employership. So, you know, have many things that you can offer people, Nick, and overlap them. Get a book called What Color Is Your Parachute? That's really cool for sort of increasing your toolbox of skills and capabilities.
That's an interesting suggestion because I remember seeing that book, you know, it's from the 60s or 70s or early 70s.
Yes.
And I remember seeing it in a lot of hippies' houses. And but, you know, the hippies didn't get it all wrong. I mean, they had the Whole Earth catalog. I love the Whole Earth catalog. And I think that I've actually seen a bumper sticker that said preppers like hippies with guns. And there is a lot of crossover. You know, if you listen to Alex Jones, I mean, or anything on GCN or the Freedom Fiends, I mean, a lot of it is we need to get our guns. But a lot of it is also we need to have organic gardens and farm and eat better.
Absolutely.
You know, there's some influence in the hippie movement that is very useful, I think.
Well, I'm a firm believer that the best woman is a hippie who can shoot, who loves to shoot. A hippie
like
chick who loves to shoot, I think, makes a great woman.
That's my wife.
And, I know a couple of guys, yeah, you included, who've married one. So that's a lot, a lot better woman than some accountant who learned to have a garden, you know.
So you got any questions, Boston, for Nick or vice versa?
Hey, Nick, do you think you'll stay in agriculture? I know you've just started this, but do you think it's something you'll stay with as a, you know, kind of a personal profession and calling in life? Or do you see yourself doing something else 10 years from now?
I'm looking at agriculture mostly. I've got a little bit of a debate whether I want to get into law. But right now I'm really thinking about agriculture. I'm in 4-H. So I've been making money off of, I've been selling sheep for a while.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I like it. I really like raising animals and it's something that I think I could do.
Yeah, that's excellent. I certainly encourage you on that. You know, we've lost so many small farmers in the past 50 years, basically since World War II. And we've gained so many lawyers, and that's not been good for society. So I'm glad you're trying to right the balance that way. And, you know, if you have a fork in the road, you know, raise sheep and be a farmer versus being a lawyer, well, I think every day you increasingly farm, the choice will be obvious to you.
Yeah. And here in Oregon, there's a lot of people who are into organic food. The liberals from Portland and Corvallis, these people, they want organic food. And that's one thing I want to reach out to with yaks. People are excited about it when I talk to them.
Sure.
Right. They want milk and cheese. And
not
meat.
Only do they want organic food, but they want it from small farmers often. There's that scene in Portlandia, which is sort of a spoof of what life's like in Portland. The first scene is they go to a restaurant. They're asking about the chicken, if it's organic, if it's cage-free, if it's free-range. And they're like, well, can we meet the chicken? And they drive to the farm and meet the chicken.
And end up joining a cult. Yeah, and you know, I think there'd be a big opportunity for really subtle, gentle education in providing that service of, you know, the people who deal with Nick, the organic farmer. And, you know,
sure.
They do want to get in Oregon. They probably do want to get to know the farmer and know if he's got good karma. And, you know, you could probably slip in a little bit in there about actual free enterprise and why the government shouldn't need to coddle you without being adversarial with people who would trust you because you're their farmer and you provide a good product for them.
Yeah, that's my plan.
Excellent. Wow. Yeah, you can make such a difference what you're doing locally. And it's important that communities have local food, because to rely on the national network and the transportation and the infrastructure and so forth is just silly. You know, communities need to be really pretty self-sufficient in quality food. And the whole thing about organic food, I wish they just call it food, because that's what food used to be. It was all organic 100 years ago, you know. And so now it's processed food, and we have to, like, educate people what food really is. And if you're not eating quality food, you're just not going to become a quality person, because, you know, you are what you eat in your diet, what you read, your entertainment, your social life, and so forth. So, man, quality in, quality out. So I salute you, young man, and please stay in touch.
Yeah, I will.
Excellent. Awesome. You got anything else, Nick?
No, but I'm really enjoying the book. You know, it's helping out.
Good.
I think my life has improved in the last, couple weeks I've been reading it. So, I mean, thank you very much.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Was there anything in the book in particular that was a big help to you and something you went through or needed to learn? Anything you could share on it?
So, I've been dealing with a little bit of depression recently, kind of been out of it, not doing what I should be doing. You know, I realized reading this book is that, I don't need to be like that. I don't need to be, moping in mourning and just wallowing in it all the time. And, I've been picking up the slack. I've been working on the yak farm more, and I've been working on homework more, just because I realized that, work ethic really matters. And if I try hard enough to do all these things, then I'm better than, everybody in my school, everybody in my age group, I'm just going to be ahead of them. But if I'm just focusing on the pain and wallowing, it's not going to help.
Right. One thing I learned from C.S. Lewis about overcoming painful emotions, whatever they are, they could be hate, envy, lust, depression, sadness, and so forth. He made an interesting point in one of his books. He said, try to analyze why you're feeling like you do, because you can't have the feeling and at the same time think about the feeling, analyze the feeling. So it's a good way of sort of shutting down that feeling, at least for a moment, until you get to the bottom of it. And then the more you understand it, the more you can deal with it. And the more you try to understand it, the less you're feeling it, because you can't simultaneously have the feeling and be kind of clinical in, assessing what's going on with yourself. And I found that very helpful, especially with me and anger about certain things in my life. I'm angry and I'm pissed off. And it's like, well, why? And I get to the bottom of it. And as I do, the feeling really tends to go away. So maybe that can help you with, stuff that you're dealing with too.
Yeah. I've tried that and it does. It seems to help me. So
good. Excellent. Well, hang in there. 15 is young, even though you sound like you're 20 years old on the radio. 15's still young. You're going to be going through stuff. You're changing. Your body's changing. Just realize that the stuff you're going through, it doesn't last. The stuff is painful and embarrassing. It doesn't last, man. You're going to be in 25 in 10 years, and it'll be a whole new world for you.
Great lesson there. And we'll have more Freedom Fiends when we return from the strip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock. We'll be right back.
All right, folks, thank you so much for sticking with us. This is the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vedati. Here in Austin, Texas, we've got Michael W. Dean and his blimp above Recluse, Wyoming. And we've also got Kenneth Royce, a.k.a. Boston Tea Party, here with us, writer of the book Modules for Manhood, formerly writer, or I guess he still is the writer. He wrote the book Boston Tea Party's Boston's Gun Bible, You and the Police, a plethora of great reads if you're out there, if you want to learn more about liberty. And speaking of learning about liberty, we had talked earlier in the show, it seems to be that the strategy a lot of people are leaning towards right now is getting to the root of what makes free people a free people, and that's how they are within themselves, how honest they are with themselves, how self-actualizing they are, how they interact with the world around them. And I think this is of the utmost importance, but at the same time, I believe that the state knows that. Washington, D.C. knows that, and they're fighting back with things like Common Core, the way the public school system works. And how can we as freedom lovers really compete if we've got these books, we've got the internet now, we've got radio shows that are espousing the ideas of liberty, but at the same time, you've got tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of kids graduating from public schools each year that have never heard these ideas, right, don't care about these ideas, and are on the exact never opposite will. End.
Right.
So what do you think of that, Boston?
Well, if your premise is that we can eventually compete with numbers and win back our country, I'd have to disagree with the premise, as lovely as it is. I wish we could win back the country. But if you look historically at humans and liberty, the window for liberty is very fluky throughout history. You know, we've got 6,000 years of recorded history, and very rarely do you have any kind of time going on when there's not war, there's not government, there's not slavery, and so forth. It seems to be the recurrent theme of human history, of bondage. And I'm not convinced that human beings have their own answer, that we can escape ourselves, so to speak. I think it's a spiritual problem. And because we're not, aligned spiritually correctly, we're having continual earthly problems and problems in society with government. So with that said, the purpose of my book is to do what I can on an individual level. Do I think it will make a difference, a meta difference? And, if everyone bought my book and applied it, it might. But in 50 years, I think we'll have another resurgence of tyranny all over again, because human beings have never gotten it right and never kept it right. America was probably the longest example of keeping it right, but that only lasted for about 150 years, and it began to curdle right after the Civil War, or including the Civil War. So, I don't think we're our own answer. Historically, we never have been. So that's my evidence on that. So I do what I can. I don't expect to eradicate evil with my work or anyone else's work, but we can maybe keep it at bay a bit here and now in this segment of history we occupy. But I'm not confident of a long-term, answer.
I also think if that is the case, and you make a very compelling one, if you are free in your own mind, if you act like a free man, if you know what that means, then it's like that old Heinlein quote that you can't conquer a free man. The most you can do is kill him. If he's still free in his soul and his heart and his mind, then that's what really matters. And it sounds like that's kind of what your book and other people's work is getting at, is that at the very least – we have to have that as a prerequisite for freedom anyway.
That's true.
In your own life.
That's true.
So
right.
Might as well do that.
Yeah, you might as well. What else were you up to anyway? I wasn't busy doing anything else. I might as well do this. And I think it's the highest thing I can do right now, being an author. So we all do what we can, and then we hope it makes a difference.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I feel like you've made a difference in at least my own life. I think Michael would probably say the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Nick here on the show said the same thing. So, yeah. Boston, we do thank you for your service, and thank you so much for joining us here on the Freedom Fiends. Do you have anything else you'd like to pitch? What are you working on next? Just more of these? You've got two other books coming out in the same series, right?
Yeah, volume 2 and 3. Volume 2 is much more tactical and like getting a job and so forth. Volume 3 talks about being a father, a husband, and your relationship with God. So they go nicely in sync with each other. Yeah, I look forward to coming back.
Yep.
Excellent.
We look forward to it, too. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been The Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com if you want to hear any of the past episodes. Full free archives right there. Worms.
Worms.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's F-R-E-E-D-O-M-F-E-E-N-S.com.